Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Welcome, Negotiation Ninja listeners, to this amazing throwback episode with Mihai Isman, where we talk about negotiating across cultures. Fantastic discussion around the clear differences that exist amongst different cultures and how different cultures approach negotiation. Really a brilliant episode. Love talking to this guy. He's super knowledgeable. Enjoy this incredible episode. Hi, Mihai. How are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm very fine. How are you?
I'm splendid, man. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun today. For the listeners who don't know a lot about you, maybe you could just fill them in on your background, what it is you do, and sort of why we're here today.
All right. My name is Mihai. I was born in Romania, and I'm living since 24 years in Germany. Since almost 5 years, I have the honor to lead my own international negotiation and conflict resolution consultancy. And the years before, I was in a top management position in the transportation sector in Germany. So I know pretty well the whole corporate environment. I was there in different positions in consulting, in business development, in lobbying, and I've negotiated also with European Union at that time. So before that, I was trainer in for leadership skills and project management. And before that, I had my own advertising agency.
Wow.
Yeah. From the theoretical background, maybe it's interesting. I have a master's degree in mediation and negotiation from here in Germany. I have a bachelor's degree in business administration. And after I've started my own company, I applied for the Harvard negotiation program, the masterclass, and I was part of that in 2016. Then I had several courses and specifications at Yale and various other institutions. And yeah, well, it's quite a journey until today. My colleagues and I at IMP, we've managed to consult 51 clients from 9 countries in negotiation and conflict resolution. We coached, like, I think almost 350 executives. And we solved 52 mediations until now. So it's a pretty interesting journey that we are in today.
Incredible, man. What a great background. One of the things that I think is super interesting, whenever I talk to someone who's sort of across the pond from us in North America, one of the questions I always ask is, what do you see as the major differences between negotiation styles between Europeans and North Americans?
It's a level of preparation from my point of view. So I think North Americans are more aware of how important preparation is. What I see at the clients here, they prepare for the topic and that's it. You know, like, and they go pretty blind in preparation for the person, preparation about the process. That's a major issue. And there is also a difference in how well you know and how well you are willing to play different negotiation strategies. To give an example, like most American businessmen that I know, they have absolutely no issue like starting in a confrontation strategy and then moving on into cooperation. And people here, usually they want to start with cooperation and they sometimes or often start with like their best proposal. And then they are in a situation where they cannot make concessions. So they are stuck with their position until the counterpart says, well, you're not helping me at all. And they're creating because of the poor preparation and because they most cannot play all strategies well, they created an awkward situation for them.
Right, because they've come in with their best offer and they've painted themselves into a corner.
Exactly.
Is that what you consider the most important thing when planning for a negotiation, is that preparation and that strategy piece?
Yes, so it's the preparation for sure. It's also the mindset. So the first thing that I do with the people is working on their mindset, how they perceive their counterpart, what they want. Do they want to only win over the other party, or do they want a healthy relationship, implications for their strategy and their behaving at the table. The third thing is practice. We are practicing several situations that are tricky, that are conflictual, because I want them to experience that in a safe environment and not the first time at the table, and then they get caught by surprise and they don't know what to do. And the fourth thing is important for me. It's handling emotions, like handling first and foremost the own emotions, but also ways to handle the emotions of the counterpart.
You mentioned something interesting there that I'd like to go back to, is mindset. When people are going in, what kind of mindset they wanted to go into. What are the different types of mindsets that you see, and why is that important?
I have in my workshops, so when I train executives, I have a nice game. So I'm asking them, look, who of you see their counterpart across the table as opponent? And who says that's a negotiation partner? And usually in Europe, at least 80% of the hands raise up when and they say, well, it's a negotiation partner. And then I do a game with them where they need to play against each other in a competitive environment. And it happens so fast that they go into the competition. That's incredible. That's incredible, really. So it's like the game, probably, you know, it's arm wrestling. So they're not allowed to talk, and they have 1 minute time. The goal is to do as much points as they can, and it's not important how much points the other part gets. So what I've experienced in 1 minute, you can do like 145 times the arm wrestling, because you don't have to apply pressure. You just switch from left to right, from left to right. And at the end, the other party has also 145 points. But that's not the point, you know, like you got the best for yourself. The arm wrestling has also some parallels to negotiation. So you prepare, but the first time you sit at a table and the other one applies pressure on you, usually you apply pressure back. And then you lose already the flexibility, you know. And also with the arm wrestling, it's like you can twice, because they're not allowed to speak, you can let him win to show him I won't oppose. So to try to let him know that if they play the game without pressure, both of them win. And that's exactly the case in conflictual negotiations, because you have to first to show that you're willing to make concessions, that you're willing to cooperate in good faith. And only if the other party doesn't want and he still thinks that he can win over you, then you can apply pressure back. So the analogy is pretty comprehensive for my clients.
Interesting. One thing that I'm picking up on what you say, and this is very similar to a lot of what Alan Tsang teaches at 88Ls, is one of the requirements for negotiation is the creation of conflict. Is that right?
Exactly.
Why is that so important?
You know, the five negotiation strategies, more or less. It's confrontation, cooperation, compromising, avoiding, accommodating. So you need to play at least confrontation and cooperation well, because confrontation means also like stating very clear what's for you negotiable and what's not negotiable, being clear in what's your negotiation frame. So what can you decide, what cannot decide? You need to be very precise, and you need to play the confrontative style as well. Plus, it is the easiest strategy. And here's the link to the mindset. If you want, if you start in the confrontation, but if you want to do a deal, you can only move forward into cooperation or into compromising.
Interesting. Yeah, I find that so many people are afraid to create that conflict, because for whatever reason, I feel like people are afraid that they're going to offend someone or something like that. Where do you think that stems from?
Wow, that's how much time do we have? I think it's very complex. Here in Europe, they search for harmony, especially in business, but creates a lot of problems, because in conflict resolutions and when I'm doing mediations in companies, usually managers ignore the conflict until everyone else in the company sees the conflict and you cannot ignore it anymore. But then to solve the conflict in a, you know, like long-lasting manner, it's very tough, because a lot of emotions and frustrations have been there. So I think we are not used anymore to go into conflict, because conflict is usually a negative word that you see like in the media, a lot of hard conflicts. But a lot of people forget that at least, let's say, innovations, the source for innovation are usually a conflict.
Yes.
But that's really an issue. And I'm telling my clients that negotiations always have a conflict at the ground, because a negotiation is about creating value and claiming a fair portion of value for yourself. And here, at least here, at claiming fair value for yourself, you need the confrontation strategy.
I think what a lot of people get wrong is they assume that their definition of what's fair and the counterparty's definition of what's fair is the same. But that's not true.
Exactly. Rarely. I've never seen it.
When people think, you know, I want to be fair and therefore I want to be cooperative, they're mixing up a couple of terms, because who gets to define what's fair? Ultimately, at the end of the day, you've got to determine what's fair for you, and the counterparty has to determine what's fair for them. And that's where that conflict is created.
More than that, Mark, more than that. When I'm sitting at the table with my client, we also talk about at the beginning the criteria for fairness. And both look at me like I'm nuts, you know. I say, well, fairness, it's a killer phrase, and it's very subjective.
Yes.
So what's fair for me as a Romanian might be not fair for you as an Austrian.
Right.
So we have to talk about, so what are the criteria? What's the measurement? Your measurement and my measurement. When we look at the end of this negotiation and say, yes, it's a fair agreement for me and it's a fair agreement for you. It's the same in mediation. So parties have to talk about what's my notion of fairness.
Yeah, brilliant. And when you get into these types of discussions with executives about, you know, how do you define what's fair, what's usually the first objection that you get when that happens?
That it doesn't matter. Then we start talking about, well, how important the relationship is. We have some cases where there is a transactional relationship, so the parties don't see each other for the coming 10, 12 years. Then it's fine. Then you can use a lot of tactics, a lot of strategies that you usually shouldn't use if you negotiate with your counterpart on a regular basis.
Yeah. Do you find that people just don't objectively quantify the value of the relationship going forward against what's fair? And so they make unnecessary concessions?
Well, here in Europe, at least, they value the relationship very much. So I'm also working with like procurement and sales guys or M&A guys or change managers or HR people. And they have a very healthy attitude towards the relationship with the counterpart. It also leads to problems because they tend to use the accommodating negotiation strategy. So they make like gifts before the negotiation even started. And they get in enormous troubles if they have intercultural negotiations. Because like people who are used to play the process, like you do in North America, and you're prepared, you know the process, and you prepare to play it. And if your counterpart makes you a gift at the beginning, it doesn't matter how open-minded you were, how well-oriented you have been, you will start asking yourself, well, maybe I can get out more of the deal than I thought. So relationship orientation, it's nice, it's good, but it creates trouble.
Yeah, love that. Ninjas, are you ready to supercharge your negotiations? Join me in San Francisco on February 24th and 25th for a free live negotiation workshop. You heard that right. I have been granted an additional 15 free tickets to Spark, where I'll be a keynote speaker along Workday CEO Anil Bhusri, Golden State's Warrior legend Bob Myers, and A.T. Kearney's procurement expert Dr. Eloise Epstein. Go to spark.scoutrfp.com and use my exclusive code NINJA2020 to register. These tickets are going fast, guys, so you got to grab them right now. Go to spark.scoutrfp.com scoutrfp.com and use my code NINJA2020 for your free ticket. Spark is an awesome annual conference hosted by Scout RFP, a Workday company. I was at Spark last year speaking with procurement leaders at companies like Adobe and Salesforce, LendingTree, Uber, ConAgra, Biogen. The list goes on and on and on. It was so inspiring. I can't wait to see you there February 24th and 25th. Don't forget, the tickets are free for a limited time, but only at spark.scoutrfp.com with my code NINJA2020. I'll see you there. If you were to think of like who you're modeling yourself after or who you model your students or your clients after, when you think of a negotiation or business person model, who do you try and model yourself or your clients after?
That's a nice question, Mark. I don't have one single role model. What I do, I learn and get better from different sources, from each professional negotiator I'm dealing with. Nevertheless, I have three persons that inspired me. The first one is it's Nelson Mandela, because he learned, I have read his books and I've analyzed the person, and he learned negotiation in prison. I mean, not in a classroom, not in business. And he's my absolute role model when it comes to the value of patience, like discipline and empathy. He analyzed and he taught his students to analyze their opponent's strength rather than creating a conflict immediately. He's also like a huge role model for in emotional intelligence and keeping control of his own emotions in a very, very tough environment. The second one is Henry Kissinger, because he was perfect in like combining the strategic, analytic, and the people-oriented level of negotiating. And it's so crucial, at least what I see here in Europe or in a German-speaking part of Europe especially. They love figures, facts, figures, and they forget preparing for the people. And that's what I've saw in diplomacy with Henry Kissinger.
He was brilliant at understanding the other party.
Exactly. And the third one is Chris Voss.
Yeah.
Because his FBI techniques he taught around my skill set that I got from Harvard, you know, like I got the Harvard mindset, and it was like two pieces of puzzle coming together.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. There are two sides of the same coin, I found.
Exactly.
The funny thing about it, like whenever I get into a conversation with someone about negotiation, they always say to me, well, you know, which strategy do you ascribe to? Is it sort of the Harvard style, or is it the, you know, Chris Voss / Jim Camp style? And I'm like, well, I mean, I think you got to have both. You can't be one or the other, or you're going to be missing so much, value.
That's what I'm missing nowadays, like positive role models. You hear in the media, at least in Europe, a lot about failed negotiations, about political negotiations, especially with US and Europe and US and China that went wrong. But you should hear about best practices and good negotiators that created a lot of good deals. And having good role models, it doesn't have to be Mandela or Kissinger. So if you have a superior, a boss who knows to negotiate well, you can take this person as a role model. It doesn't matter. Each negotiator that you meet in your professional career, you can learn something from it.
Yeah. So Mihai, that's super interesting about your three role models. I definitely love the Nelson Mandela reference. I think that's fantastic. I'm a big, big fan. I'm originally from South Africa. So having him as a role model in my life is sort of a big deal as well. Kissinger, obviously, no-brainer. Voss, really, really good. As we close off here, Mihai, what is one piece of information that you would like to leave the listeners with? What do you think is the most critical thing that they need to think about when it comes to negotiation?
So no matter how hard the resistance is, you have to do your best. It also shows that cooperation is the hardest negotiation strategy. And it's important to be prepared. It's crucial. And especially the analysis of the stakeholders, like people directly or indirectly affected by the outcome, influencers, supporters, antagonists, and so on. We had a negotiation which took 12 months. It was between a European ministry and five other stakeholder groups, like 30 people on the table, multi-million projects. And one of the group, they didn't want to negotiate. They played the game. They told us they want to negotiate, but at the end, they didn't want to move. So we tried like everything in our possibilities, but they didn't want to. So we'd reach an 80% agreement instead of a 100% agreement. And that's also a lesson that I had to learn. So sometimes 80% is enough. You know, like don't try to reach 100% when it's not possible.
How do you know when you're at the edge, right? Like, I mean, you said, you know, they didn't want to negotiate. Was there a body language signal or did they just flat out tell you, look, we're done? How did you know that you were right at the edge?
You know it after you tried everything. Yeah, now 12 months negotiating, it was like we tried to bring them into cooperation. It didn't work. We tried to create an impasse. It didn't work. We tried to warn them. It didn't work. We tried to apply then power pressure. It didn't work. So it was obvious that we tried honestly every tactic that we had with no result. So then you have to accept that they don't want to. And that's fine. That it should be fine.
Don't push it so that the negotiation ends up falling apart. You know, maybe 80% is enough and we get to that 80% and that's good enough.
Exactly. One message is important to let the listeners know. It's worth learning how to negotiate well, because it will boost not only your business career, but it will help you in private life. That's my experience. And I see people, so don't listen to people who maybe say you don't have talent for negotiation. For exceeding at negotiating, you need first and foremost hard work. If you have an open mind, if you are willing to learn new things, to reflect your behavior, and if you have a good coach on your side, you will succeed. That's fact. I'm not a fan of the sentence, negotiation is an art. I see negotiation as a craftsmanship. So you can learn it from scratch. And you will always should practice the things that sound so easy, like empathy, listening, change of perspectives, and mindset. It's like a no-brainer, but it's very, very tough to prepare for that.
I absolutely love it. And to that end, how do people find you online?
I have a LinkedIn profile. It's Mihai Isman. And you can visit also my website. It's ismanundwithyoupartner.com.
Wonderful. For the listeners, just so that you know, I will link out to all of Mihai's social network stuff as well as the corporate website. Mihai, thank you so much for being on the show, man. I greatly appreciate it. I appreciate all the wisdom that you share on LinkedIn, all the knowledge that you shared with the listeners. Fantastic having you on.
Thanks for the invitation, Mark. It was a pleasure.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.